We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
It's the True Faith Newcastle United podcast. Crystal Palace 1, Newcastle United 1. You've got Norman Reilly, Pete Davey and Chris Shipman, who were there. They were in the away end at Selhurst Park to talk to you today about Newcastle United's point. Is it a good point? Was it a good performance? Where do we go from here in the Graham Jones era? Pete, I'm going to start with you, mate. How was your day?
I really enjoyed that away day, if I'm honest with you. You know, result aside, there's no better feeling than getting to London St Pancras and hearing the roar of Newcastle fans chanting, screaming the whole place down. You know that the Geordies are there. You know it's an away day. And there was a different kind of feel to the reaction. And to the fans today, or yesterday, should I say, it was a really, 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 really good feeling. It was a feeling as if there was a new era there, that things had been cleansed at the club. And I love that word cleansed. I know Norm's used it before, and I've stole it, so I apologise. But I think it's a great word to use, and I think it's a great word to explain how the Newcastle fans felt yesterday. There were very interesting chants when I got off the train at Selhurst Park of "We're Newcastle and we're going to buy the league," which got a few laughs from the Crystal Palace fans. But and it was all sort of tongue in cheek, but it was very much of the mindset and the feel of Newcastle fans. I have to say, when I got into the stadium, it really did feel like a celebration. There was people on top of each other in terms of on top of their shoulders, singing, dancing, Saudi flags in the air, Newcastle flags in the air. It was a real party feel. And, you know, it felt different. It really did feel different. And it's the one time that I've been to an away game that actually I was able to get to the bar. There was a little corner where you could just sneak in because no one was queuing, but there wasn't a way in because it was literally blocked off by everyone jumping up and down, singing, screaming, chanting. And that's what everyone was there for. There was only a little small section as you entered the away stand that everyone was stood by, so you couldn't actually get into the away stand to go and sit or stand because everyone was blocking it off, just because that was the only way you could actually have your drink. It was the only little spot that you could drink, and it was really, 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 really enjoyable just to be in and around the atmosphere. And I remember messaging my mates when I got in there and just said, "Look, this feels different today. You know, win, lose, or draw. It really did feel like it was a new era, and it's, you know, exciting times ahead for Newcastle fans."
Spot on there, Peter, description in terms of it feeling different. When I arrived in London yesterday, I had a doing from London Bridge to Penge, and just walked in the pub, the Pauline Arms, a bit of a ropey pub, but a really enjoyable atmosphere, like a really kind of a ropey pub that you really want to kind of have a good day drinking in. And I got in there, and it was just, I think the lads I met there, Sean and Ali, and I was with John, my mate, and it was just immediate. It was like, "How are you?" straight off the bat. And it hasn't been like that, I would say, since Benitez was in charge. And that might sound a bit harsh, but I remember me and Chris went up to Norwich in Bruce's second game. And at that point, you know, the kind of, you're trying to reserve judgment on what it might be like under Steve Bruce. But that game and that day almost, it kind of something flipped inside me. It was like, yeah, this is just going to be horrible for however long this happened. It's going to be horrible. And it kind of has been. Whereas yesterday felt like, things are going to start moving in the right direction. And I was at the Spurs game last week. Whereas in the city, the atmosphere was fantastic right up to the game. And obviously, you know, the kind of mad 5 minutes of kickoff were brilliant. Those physical reminders of what had gone on for the last 2 years. I mean, 14 years, if you want to look at it from that, from the kind of just an Ashley perspective, but the Sports Direct signs, Bruce in the dugout, it was almost like, yes, there's a change happened, but it doesn't, I kind of haven't quite accepted it yet. Whereas yesterday, even though Jones worked under Bruce, and even though I'm pretty sure, did I see Steve Agnew on the sideline? Am I just imagining that? So the coaching staff still later did feel different, and the atmosphere was absolutely incredible. And I'm sure Chris will comment on how crowded it was. It was definitely a COVID super spread event. I'm absolutely bricking it, taking a lateral flow test in the next couple of days. But the ground itself, it does, where Pete was talking about getting a drink at the bar, they do San Miguel on draft, which is quite nice. But it does feel a bit like a sort of underground bunker I went to in Prague in the late 90s. And I'm too old for that now. So yes, knock it down, RC. Knock it down. But Ian, absolutely brilliant, brilliant pre-match build-up. It could well be the start of a new era. Do you want linting up top, lads?
Yeah, Norm, you've set me up for a bit of humble pie eating, because on the preview podcast that we did for patrons, I was saying what a fantastic ground that Selhurst Park is, you know, for its kind of old school feel and kind of loud charm and atmosphere. And it does have them, but also in a kind of COVID or post-COVID, whatever world we're in now, it doesn't quite have the same charm with everyone kind of being pressed together. So, yeah, I'm kind of going to walk back my answer that I had on the preview on that. But I would just echo what you both said. I think the thing for me about it was a return to a sense of anticipation, looking forward to what was going to happen and the sense that things were unknown. And, you know, what are the reasons that we go to football for? Yes, to support the club that we love, but also because of the inherent drama that is in the game and, you know, not knowing what's going to happen. We've not had that for far too long. So, you know, we don't know what the kind of probably quite short Graham Jones era is going to bring. We don't know what's going to happen afterwards, but it was the sense that, you know, something different is possible. Something else is going to happen. And I think in that kind of vein, I don't think I've ever kind of refreshed Twitter like I was doing, you know, in the build up to 2 o'clock for that lineup. I'm just really fascinated to know what the lineup was. And the club actually leaked it themselves 5-10 minutes early on Instagram, which kind of sent us into a bit of a kind of a frenzy on whether this was real or not. But yeah, just the return to kind of a sense of occasion and yeah, what could be.
Next one, lads. It sounds like a cracking day. I watched in a pub, which was a first in about 10 years. You know, I just happened to be in the pub, was going to watch on my phone, and then on the big screen, there it is, Newcastle United playing at Crystal Palace. Away end booming. Sounded unbelievably loud on TV. Unbelievably. And we're still not very good. I'm sure we're going to talk about that in this podcast. Might touch on it. But the sense of support was just like, it was probably my favourite part of watching that game, apart from Callum Wilson's goal, was just hearing the away end consistently, you know, completely out-singing, as you'd expect from away fans, but out-singing the home fans. And it just feels like Newcastle United's back. It's not about being good. It's not about winning the league. Those things would be nice, and I'm sure we'll get there eventually with them. But I just sensed a real pride from that away end yesterday. Maybe it's a little bit of togetherness because everyone seems to be against us at the minute. Media, other football fans, Jurgen Klopp, bizarrely, loads of people like that kicking off about us relentlessly just seems to have brought us together even more, and that's really, really, really positive for me. And there's a lot of pride. I think there's a lot of pride anyway about Newcastle and the football club at the minute and what we've got back. But I think there's even more pride in supporting my club, which is what we do so well. Norman, let's get into it then. The Graham Jones era, if it is to be an era, as Chris says, because it might not last very long. How was it for you, mate? What did you make of that point yesterday?
Incredibly fortuitous point. We, you know, if you watch back the highlights, you're at the game, and it felt like we were being slapped. I mean, it really did. I think you could argue that defensively there was, you know, we were organised, let's say, but to me it was more a case of that kind of last-ditch desperate defending, which suggests that obviously there's a kind of renewed determination in the players, right? You get that. There's more of a fight, right? So that's one thing I will say is the players did not, like, they didn't give up at any point, despite the fact that Palace were dominating the ball. They created, I mean, you're looking at what? A good four real clear-cut chances as well. So it was a difficult performance to watch. But even then, weirdly, despite the fact that Palace were dominating, I did have this, there was a little bit of confidence inside me. I did think, we'll get something here. And obviously, when you've got Callum Wilson up top, you've always got a chance, right? I mean, the goal itself, I'm sure we'll talk about it more, but wow, something spectacular. I must say that when we saw the lineup, as Chris says, leaked on Instagram, I wonder if we get to a stage where a player finds out they're dropped via Instagram one day. I'm sure that'll happen. You know, much like Carl Dollar found out in the press, someone will find out on Instagram that they've been dropped. But I think looking at the lineup and trying to sort of work out what the formation was, it became quite obvious that it was three centre-halves, two wing-backs, and then you're trying to figure out what positions you're going to see in terms of Maximin, Fraser and Hayden. And then when I saw when the players came out and they kind of lined up, it became obvious that Fraser was on the left-hand side of a narrow midfield and Hayden on the right-hand side. And that threw me a bit, I must say. I did think, well, does this indicate that a lot of the tactical input over the last sort of 6 to 10 months has been from Graham Jones? A little bit disconcerting. And for all of the huff and puff of players like Hayden and Fraser, they still weren't playing in their best positions, so they still weren't as effective as I feel they could be if there had been, you know, Fraser on the right-hand side, for example, which is where he plays, a wide right, not as a narrow midfielder on the left-hand side of a midfield three. So that was a bit disconcerting. And what it suggests is, as much as personally I like Graham Jones, I mean, he's from Gateshead for a start, which is where I'm from. It's, I think, possibly the first manager from Gateshead in Newcastle's history. I'll double-check. I'm sure there's probably someone in, like, 1903 managed them, but, you know, I mean, my history doesn't stretch that back far. But and he's patter before the game, very much an incredibly proud Geordie, right? There's no two ways about it. And you get the impression with Jones that he is someone who has followed Newcastle all of his life. Bruce, yes, he's from Newcastle. Yes, he supported them as a kid, but he moved away and became a Man U fan, really. Whereas Jones, you still feel that he's a genuine Newcastle fan, and for him, it must have been a great day. So, all in all, mate, you know, Jones isn't the answer to the problem that we have at the moment. But yesterday, I saw a lot of fight there, and you've got to give him credit for that, right? The players responded to him.
Very interesting, mate. And there has been some comments on social media about Jones getting it. You know, coming over to the away end after the game, punching the air, genuinely feeling like he is part of the football club, not just here to pick up his money and moan and whatever else we got from his predecessor. It's a question I'm kind of interested in this from all three of you, but Norman, I'll start with you, all right? I think that's a really, really good point. Okay, that's a really good point. Crystal Palace are 14th in the league, but that probably doesn't do them justice in terms of how they perform this season. I mean, Patrick Vieira must be thinking, how have I not taken 6 points this week from the two performances? But Newcastle had, what, 21% possession in the first half, 25% possession in the second half. If Crystal Palace had won that game 3 or 4-1, I really don't think we could have complained. Do you think, there's an argument out there, that we're adding a little bit of gloss to this? Because, and again, I'm most interested in your opinions, because you were there, lads, and you felt it and you saw it, and you celebrated it full time. You celebrate with Graham Jones. Are we adding a little bit of gloss here that once again Newcastle have been very poor and very, very fortunate not to have been soundly beaten here? And in terms of staying in the Premier League, this hasn't actually told us that much more about this club and this team moving forward.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The first part of your question, definitely, I'm hugely, hugely fortuitous, right? We got absolutely dominated yesterday. I think Vieira is doing incredible work at Crystal Palace. You could argue they should have had 9 points in the last three games if you take the Brighton game into it as well. He's had to kind of create a revolution immediately, right? The Hodgson losing 8 players, the way that the way that team had been set up for years, he's done brilliantly, and they were way, way better than us yesterday, way better. However, we still got a point out of the game, right? Despite the fact we could have lost by 3 or 4 goals and not complaining, we still got a point. And what that suggests is there was, even though the performance itself was poor over across the board, what I saw from the players yesterday was a bit of fight. So the new person coming in, there is clearly something there to work with. So I'm trying to be objective, but I can't, because again, at that match yesterday, that put it this way, the optimism I felt during the game, even though we're being dominated, right, I still didn't feel we're going to lose the game. Those players, it's probably even more for them, right? They've got this kind of this blank slate. They've got this new start. They know the new man's coming in. So their determination, their optimism, I think that regardless of how bad we were yesterday, I still saw a kind of, you know, like a little bit of what the new manager has to inherit, and that gives me faith. However, what I will say is that we need to get the new man in like as soon as possible, because the run of fixtures we have coming up is incredibly tough, and also we can't sign any players until January, right? So we need the new man in ASAP. But I still maintain a little bit of hope, mate, based on what I saw yesterday.
Yeah, I have to agree. I mean, you could argue that we could have comfortably lost the game. However, you know, the way in which we set up wasn't really much different in terms of our formation, in terms of the style that we play. There wasn't anything revolutionary that Graham Jones put in place for us. I was disappointed that the likes of Fabian Schär and Jamal Lewis didn't start. I was disappointed to see Clark in the team because I thought he was horrendous against Spurs. I thought if there was one player to be dropped, it was him. The disappointing thing for me was how passive our forward line was in the first half. With the forward line that we had, you would expect them to press high to put them under pressure. To make them make mistakes, and we didn't. We kind of just sat off and let them have the ball deep and bring the ball forward. The lack of pressing allowed them to play through the midfield with absolute ease. And that's not what you want when you're a team that's set up with ultimately a back five. It wasn't a 3-5-2. It was a 5-3-2 effectively because of how deep we were. And that created the mentality. The mentality is through the team. People will talk about the defence and how we're set up at the back. It's how you start going forward. And the fact that Alan St. Maximin and Callum Wilson were so passive in their ability to press the ball high up, it set the tone for the rest of the team. And that's why we saw such a real poor performance in the first half. It was just set up really to try and try and hold out, really. We were trying to play a game of two halves effectively, and we've done this quite a lot, you know, before under Bruce, again when Graham Jones came in. What we do is we set up to not concede in the first half and then try and nick it in the second. And I felt very early on that was the mentality. What I do have to say is that I thought the organisation of that back three, in particular the three centre-backs, was a hell of a lot better. And although I questioned Kieran Clark, I actually thought he was the best of the three at the back. I actually thought he defended well yesterday. Lascelles did well. I thought Kraft used his pace well to get in and close down. I thought the areas where we were really, really sort of under pressure was Elise on their right hand side. He gave a torrid time to Matt Ritchie. Matt Ritchie was very, very focused on not letting him get down the wing, but actually didn't realise for the first 10 minutes that he was left footed. So all he was doing is cutting back onto his left and just whipping a ball in. And we didn't find a way of stopping that at all. It was all very, very passive. Going back to the point that Norman said, the one thing that I took from that game is that once we went 1-0 down, there was a reaction. Because many a time before, in many a game under Bruce and beyond and before that. There's not a reaction from this team. There was a reaction. You could see, you know, we went up 10% straight after they scored the goal. And actually, rather than sit back and allow them to potentially score a second, we went at them and created a number of chances on the back of that, in which we got the goal from. And I think the fact that we scored not long after they put themselves in the lead really gave us a sense of optimism that we could actually go on and achieve something.
Spot on there, Pete. The point about the forwards is absolutely bang on, because I remember yesterday the lads I was stood with, it was just, we're just repeating to each other, why aren't the press? Why aren't the pressing? We were so deep, and every time Palace had the ball at the back, there was absolutely zero kind of chasing down, just something as simple as chasing down. Now, I would say a couple of things about that. I think that's been Newcastle United for the last 2.5 years, right? That is what we are. We're a passive side, as you say. The forwards don't close down, because that is something I'm guessing that they're told not to do, or they're not being told to do it specifically. And this, again, makes me think, well, actually, when a new man comes in, I think we'll see that immediately. I think that'll change me, because it's so obvious to us as fans, right, that we are not putting any pressure on their back line at all when they've got the ball. And I think that'll change. But also, and I think, Alex, you maybe mentioned this to me last week in a conversation, it's the fitness levels as well, right? The thing is, Wilson and Maximin, Wilson especially, is the kind of forward who harasses and harries, right? But he's had a lot of injuries since he's been in Newcastle. And also, those players, to me, don't necessarily look that they're kind of at optimum fitness, and that probably does tie into how training has been for the last couple of years. So those two things, the new man comes in, new coaching staff, the players will be, what, say 3 or 4 weeks down the line, they'll be a lot fitter, and I think they'll be tooled to kind of press higher up the pitch. So again, this is a little thing that gives me hope. I don't think it's the players themselves who are poor. I just think it's the fact that for 2 years they've been kind of drilled into playing this incredibly passive style of football.
I'm going to try and be optimistic and try and be positive here. I've got to say that when I left the ground yesterday, I wasn't entirely happy with it. But to be positive, I think, Pete, you're right to mention a few things there. You know, but for Benteke, Palace would have run away with it. But, you know, Bruce's luck has become Jones's luck. So, you know, we'll take that. But kind of two extra positives that I want to mention. You, Pete, you rightly mentioned Kraft. You kind of mentioned him in passing there. I think credit where credit is due. I think rightly on this podcast, we have said time and time again for pretty much all of his time here that Emile Kraft is not a Premier League player and is not sufficiently good for this level. I don't really know how he gets in the Sweden squad. Maybe that says something about the dearth of defenders in Sweden. But anyway, but yesterday I thought he played very well. Could have had a goal, remember, as well, cleared off the line at the other end. So, you know, maybe he kind of adds something that as a squad player that, you know, we should give credit for. I think the other positive that I would give is Carl Darlow. You know, obviously, we're all hoping that Martin Dubravka comes back. We were hoping he'd be back a couple of weeks ago. It just hasn't happened for whatever reason. But again, credit where credit is due. You know, for Darlow coming off his line well, seemed to organise the defence fairly well. I thought he had a pretty good game. And, you know, look where we were earlier in the season, you know, shipping 3 or 4 goals or whatever it was. On multiple occasions, Freddie Woodman, you know, had a really tough debut in this side. And while Carl Darlow is not Martin Dubravka, you know, I think he's decent at this level. And yeah, credit to him for what was a kind of a fairly decent performance.
Yeah, I just wanted to add on to what Norm was saying about, but in particular, the fitness side of things, particularly with the attacking players. I actually partly agree with that, but I actually partly believe that I think the likes of St. Maxey and Callum Wilson and one or two others in the squad have a fear of getting injured, which is why they don't play at their 100% maximum. So you don't see Callum Wilson doing the full-on running unless he's guaranteed to be in on goal or is guaranteed a chance at goal. He always plays at sort of 90%. And I've noticed, and I'll talk a little bit about this later on with Alan Sitt-Maximin, is that he at times plays at 80-70% because I think there's a risk there of him getting injured. And I think there's a risk in his mind. I think it's a mentality thing because of the amount of injuries they've had. So I think there's times where he could give more, particularly with the pressing, because if you're pressing someone high, you're having to produce a hell of a lot more sprints in the game. And if you're producing a hell of a lot more sprints, there's an opportunity there that later on in the game that you're going to pull up with a muscle injury. And we know with both of those players, they've got history with muscle injuries. And I think that's a big concern. And that's where, in these type of situations, you need players to come in and take the load off them. And that's where we're really struggling at the moment. And it just highlights the need to strengthen the squad in all areas in January, because we need those players to be playing at 100% maximum if we're going to get the absolute best out of them. I fully believe that if we would press the Crystal Palace high up the pitch on Saturday, that they would have conceded his chances. They would have, because they weren't great at the back. They weren't great on the ball. They weren't an amazing side defensively, but we allowed them to look better than what they were because we didn't put pressure on them in the way in which we should have. But there's definitely a mentality thing in a risk of getting injured for a number of our players in the team currently.
That's a great point. And what I would say is, again, and this is me sort of clinging to the optimism, is that when a new manager comes in, if this is the right appointment, so you think of Benitez when he was in charge, right? You think of how the players were conditioned and how little we suffered from injuries. What I like to think is that this new person comes in and players such as Maximin and Wilson, that conditioning is just absolutely spot on. So you will start seeing that extra 10%. And as you say, if we bring in a genuine understudy or competition for Wilson, then that'll change things. So I do think you're right. There is this fear of getting injured, but with the right coaching staff, the right manager in, that's something that we might see disappear. So again, there is, you know, there's room for, there's plenty of optimism, right? Let's be optimistic. God.
Good points, lads. It's a really interesting discussion. And Chris, this might be partially what it's like watching it on TV to being in the away end. I actually thought two of Newcastle's worst performers yesterday were Carl Dollar and Emile Kraft. I mean, it is all about moments, and I'm concentrating on moments, and I'm only looking at the players when the ball is near them ultimately, whereas you have a broader view about what's going on off the ball, following runs, you know, filling space, all those kind of things I'm probably not seeing. But I thought Benteke in particular, they clearly targeted two players along our back five, and that was Kraft and Richie. Benteke was pulling off onto Kraft, particularly in the first half, relentlessly. You know, that header that hit the post, Kraft doesn't even get off the floor. And I suppose that, you know, if I'm going to be critical of Graham Jones, I'm thinking some of the batshit mental team selections we've seen this season, I've been blaming Steve Bruce, but you've gone with, you know, Norman sent me a message before saying, if you look at Palace's bench, which is very strong, by the way, very strong indeed, a lot of those players would walk into our first team. Well, I think a lot of players on our bench should walk in our first team, like Miguel Almiron and several others, Joe Willock, Jamal Lewis, I think, would should all be starting for me. But it's one game, and it's a game where we've gone in and we've got a point, so I can't be too critical of that. But Darlow as well, Benteke actually heads the ball, I think, on the six-yard line. I think Martin Dubravka comes and claims that ball, and at this level, we're so reliant on those moments going our way because we create so little in the game and we are so passive, like you lads have all said. I feel, and again, I'm not criticising the selection of Darlow in particular. It's just, I think the more we play with these players who I believe are below the required standard of the Premier League, crucial moments like that go against you. And for all of the reasons like you lads have correctly said, we simply don't have enough. At the minute, we don't have enough to A, keep a clean sheet, which is a massive problem, and B, score twice in a game. We don't look like scoring twice in a game, even though we scored twice against Spurs, but that was with a huge slice of luck. So I think that's interesting anyway. But Chris, I mean, first of all, you could either come back on any of those points, but if you want to move on, I know you're really keen to talk about Newcastle's central midfield, which has been a problem for a long time at the club, and I think you're going to say it was a problem yesterday.
Yes, I am. You know, I've done my positive points, and you're right to kind of critique a couple of them. That's fair enough. But yeah, I think to be critical, I think the midfield is the area we probably almost threw it away. I think it's fair to say that centre midfield, defensive midfield has long been a problem position for us. It's been kind of patched up over the last kind of decade or so. Diarmo had a good kind of 6 to 9 months where he was a world beater, but you know, definitely since then we haven't necessarily had anything aside from, you know, Willock when he came in, you know, for a couple of months earlier in the year. The trio that we had starting in midfield yesterday, you know, we had Sean Longstaff and Isaac Hayden probably pick themselves, given that Willock is still unfit and apparently has been having injections in his toe for a little while now. And then also Shelby suspended for stupidly getting himself sent off. So Longstaff and Hayden, you know, totally understand that. But to have Ryan Fraser in centre mid for me was a mistake. It was kind of mentioned earlier. Jones said in his pre-match press conference at the end of the working week that everyone knew their job. But for me, that wasn't evident. And I think Ryan Fraser is the kind of example of that. I think it could be argued that actually he, by being played out of position there, actually confused things for the two other players. Now, Sean Longstaff and Isaac Hayden are limited, but we have seen, particularly under, I was going to say the previous manager but one, Rafa Benitez, that actually they can be coached to be very effective at this level. But I think having Ryan Fraser in there, first, he doesn't play to his strengths. And because he's not a natural central midfielder, he disrupted the other two. They didn't press or kind of move as a unit. Fraser, because he's naturally a winger, kind of kept drifting wide to the point where, you know, I wasn't sure whether he was being played as a central midfielder. And had to check, but apparently he was, but he was kind of moving around so much that wasn't necessarily clear. I do understand that it is hard to find a place for Ryan Fraser, and you know, he is a good player. He proved that at Bournemouth, and we know historically that he has linked up well with Callum Wilson, but you know, partly and largely actually through injury, he hasn't done that in his time here. So you know, maybe he is a luxury player. Is he a player that we can afford to have in a relegation battle? I'm not necessarily sure, but particularly based on yesterday. And I think the final thing I would say about Fraser and just that midfield trio that didn't work is because the way that Fraser was disrupting the central midfield, the players that they were shielding in the defence, particularly Lascelles, you know, he's not good with the ball at his feet. You definitely saw a sense of panic there, you know, hoofing the ball even more than kind of usual. And there was a kind of, there was clearly a kind of, you know, if you're having the likes of Edouard and Zaha running at you, a sense of kind of panic of not knowing how to deal with them. So the final thing that I would say there is, you know, we had Fabian Scher on the bench. I don't think, you know, he doesn't start as a central midfielder, defensive midfielder, but if you're going to play the three, would it not have been better to have Scher, who plays there for Switzerland, rather than Fraser, who definitely isn't a central midfielder?
Well, that's a bold suggestion, Chris, given that Scher has played central defence midfield for Newcastle before and been absolutely rinsed, if I recall correctly. I would just like to see him at centre-half, to be honest with you. But your point on Fraser disrupting the other two midfielders, interesting. I probably disagree with it because I just think the reality is Ryan Fraser, they cannot play in a narrow midfield position. He's a winger. He's an out-and-out winger. And I think that I don't think he disrupted Longstaff, let's say, because Longstaff's in his natural position. I think what you've got is you've got Ryan Fraser, who is a winger playing in a narrow centre midfield. It's almost like he's overcompensating because he doesn't know how to play in centrally right. So he's kind of almost static in the centre of the park. Like he's not he doesn't necessarily know how to play that position, what runs to make, when to go away, when to come back in. And then you've got Isaac Hayden on the right-hand side of a three-man midfield who isn't, in my opinion, he is a central defensive midfielder. He's not someone who should be on the right or the left of a sort of narrow midfield. He needs to be in the centre, covering the sort of 40-yard area, kind of, you know, working side to side, making tackles, making blocks, closing down space. What Hayden tends to do when he's playing that position is he starts to drift out wide and he ends up almost becoming like a kind of auxiliary right-hand side of midfielder. And we saw that yesterday. He kept Vieira to the right-hand side, and he kind of play in that position. So I don't think it's a case of player, as I say, Fraser disrupting other players' positions. I just think these players don't know how to play in those positions. And that was my concern when I saw the lineup yesterday, was he's picked a couple of players out of position again. So it is, and I think there is a place for Fraser in this relegation battle. There's a place for Fraser if we play either a sort of 4-2-3-1 or a 4-4-1-1. He can play out wide, and he can play very well out wide as well.
Yeah, just to add on to that, you know, I don't necessarily blame Ryan Fraser for his performance yesterday. I didn't think he was the worst in the team at all. I don't think he even really did his job that badly, if I'm honest with you. What I do remember is that him saying in an interview before the start of the season and saying that, you know, he's desperate to play and he's willing to learn a new position in order to get onto the pitch. So I've kept that in mind when I watch him play, because he's trying to learn a new position. It's very hard to learn on the job effectively, which is what he's done. And also we have to remember that I don't think Ryan Fraser has played 3 games in a row since he's come to the club. And that's not necessarily always due to injury. It's due to non-selection as well. So he needs time to build up and get used to the way of playing. And just playing 90 minutes or close to 90 minutes on a regular basis, he'll need time. Personally, I was happy to see him start. I personally wanted him to see. I wanted to see a 4-3-3, and I wanted to see him on the left. So Maxi on the right. Callum Wilson through the middle, because that's where you get Ryan Fraser at his best, making forward runs, creating chances. We don't get to see that. He spent most of the time covering and supporting Matt Ritchie on the left-hand side with Elise, who was tearing him inside and out. That's what he spent most of the game doing. So you don't get to see the Ryan Fraser that we want to see. However, my other point was more to do with the other two centre midfielders. And it highlighted to me after about 15 minutes in this game, in the first half, how much of a need for January to come round, not to get a defensive solid midfielder, but to get someone that's creative, because it's really clear to see that we haven't got a midfielder that is comfortable on the ball. How many times our midfield had the ball? Isaac Hayden on the right-hand side of that 3 in midfield, or Longstaff would receive the ball with Akers in the midfield and make a wrong pass or take too long on the ball and get it nicked. You need a player in there, like a Kabay we had, that had a little bit of elegance on the ball, that gets the ball, knows how to play a pass, knows how to keep the ball ticking over from side to side. Neither of those players know how to do that. And I'd argue that even Joe Willock doesn't play that way either. You know, the only one that does play that way is Jonjo Shelvey, but he can't do the other side of the job in terms of the dogged stuff, the working, the tireless running that those guys do put in over 90 minutes. So we're in a real difficult situation. It was really, really clear after about 15-20 minutes in the first half that whenever they got the ball, if there wasn't a simple pass on within 5 yards of them, they were just hoofing it forward. And the amount of times we get possession back because we were just hoofing it long, and you had Wilson and ASM just looking at them with their arms out as if to say, what am I supposed to do with that? And it was just running to the keeper or running back to their centre backs, and then they were able to build again. You can't play like that in the Premier League. You can't, if you're setting up the way we set up, you cannot afford to constantly give possession back to the opposition because your midfielders can't hold on to the ball. It's crazy that happens. And it's happened time and time again. And we need more so a creative midfielder, someone that's good on the ball, maybe even 2 in January, rather than that big, solid defensive midfielder that we've all talked about. Certainly if we're going to play this position anyway.
Yeah, well said. And I think we can all agree that Newcastle's central midfield has been a disgrace for a long time. And I think you all touched on this a little bit. You know, what is the purpose? What is Newcastle central midfield supposed to do? Because if you look at that game and that setup yesterday, and I have some sympathy with Jones, okay, because Newcastle are the worst defensive team in the Premier League. All right, so he's got that problem. He's also got the problem of being, you know, in a relegation battle, potentially only being here for 2 games, the team desperate for points, the manager's gone, they've hardly trained for 2 weeks before the manager left, which, you know, we'll get swept under the carpet, but could do long-term damage to our survival chances this season. And he's got to make a decision. He's got to think, how do I get something out of this game? And he got something out of the game. However, I agree with you, Pete, that we're simply in central midfield. Or it's almost not the plan for central midfield players to do anything with the ball. Like you say, it can't just be the players that every time they kick the ball, they get the ball, either under pressure or if we break up a counter-attack or break an attack, the ball is just aimlessly kicked forward. So I wonder what these players are actually being told. Is it, we've come here for a point? I mean, Jones says post-match, he says, we've come here to win, we haven't won. Fair enough. That's the right thing to say. Much better on-message stuff from Jones than his predecessor. However, I think what is Sean Longstaff told to do? What runs is Ryan Fraser supposed to be making? Where is Matt Ritchie supposed to be when we're in possession? I don't have the answers to those questions from having watched that game and watched most of our games this season. And how much credit or how much blame does Jones get? Because he has been the kind of main person, allegedly, behind the tactics, behind a lot of team selections this season. Yesterday's team selection and the tactics were more of the same for me. Lots of players played out of position. Substitutions that were a little bit baffling. A weird kind of 5-3-2 formation instead of playing 5-2-3, and like you correctly said, Pete, playing ASM and Fraser either side of Wilson, which then meant they could drop into a 5-4-1 out of possession, but it wasn't like that at all, was it? Because as Norman says, either Caden's popping up the right of midfield. Really, really strange one for me, and I don't think there's going to be too many solutions ahead of Chelsea next week, though Jonjo Shelvey does come back in to contention because he's no longer suspended. Let's talk about a player who's picked up a little bit of criticism recently, last two games in particular, Pete. Alan Saint-Maximin, what are your thoughts on him, mate?
Well, Alan Saint-Maximin, he's a wonderfully talented player, but has a number of flaws, which is a concern for me. And a lot of them were seen in his performance yesterday. I thought he was probably one of the worst performers on the pitch, if I'm honest. And I don't say that very often about him because he always has a moment of brilliance that really kind of lights up the game no matter what. He didn't yesterday. I thought he was awful. And, you know, I like to watch certain players and I did. And two players that I focused on was Elise, because I know about him and I've watched him play for Crystal Palace and he was terrific. And then the other was Alan Saint-Maximin. His first sprint was one of the worst sprints that I saw when he went to track down one of their centre-backs. It was half-hearted. It was as if he couldn't be bothered to make a run. And that set the tone for me of his performance for the rest of the game. It was a very half-hearted performance. And for me, I have a concern with him moving forward. Now, it goes back to my point with regards to Steve Bruce. Now, he's been very vocal with regards to Steve Bruce leaving. He's talked about how great Steve Bruce was as a person. He's talked about, you know, how he's going to miss him as manager, blah, 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 all the rest of it. Now, a lot of people have asked the question, why? Why has he done this? And I believe it's because he's unsettled at the moment, massively. Now, if we go back, if we rewind from before he signed for Newcastle United, he had two managers previously at Nice. Lucien Favre, who's interestingly linked with us, has been our new manager. And the other one was the manager in the opposition's dugout, Patrick Vieira. Neither of them were able to get the best out of Alan Saint-Maximin. Why? Because they weren't able to put him in a tactical system that could allow him to play at his best and still keep the team in check. But he's come to Bruce, and Bruce has been able to do that in the Premier League, in the best league in the world, has been able to do that, try and bring him in tactically, whether he's out on the left, whether he's out on the right, or even as a front two, to allow him to still tactically be able to shine and do his best in a team. I think now, and I think his future is secured at Newcastle for the time being, but I think now he's unsettled. And the reason being is because now Bruce is gone, a new manager's going to come in, a higher profile manager that's going to come in, that won't necessarily just accept Alan Saint-Maximin and the way in which he plays. Okay. The top managers want players that want to play in a system, no matter how good you are. If you don't play in a system and you don't play in the way that they want to play, they will look to move you on, or you'll find yourself on the bench and they'll be able to justify it. Now, as with the financial power that we now have, that could well be the case. Now, we've been talking about, oh, it's great. We're the richest club in the world. We've got financial power. We've got ambition. We now can build a team around Alan Saint-Maximin. I don't think Alan Saint-Maximin's thinking like that. I think Anicet Maxim's thinking, I'm dispendable here. I could potentially get moved on for how good I've been because I don't fit into the way in which a new manager might want us to play. And I think there's a little bit of concern there. Now, has he done himself any justice in his performance yesterday? No, not at all. And he needs to now, between now and the rest of the season, or in particular between now and when a new manager is appointed, he needs to show that actually he can play within the system and still be effective in games. Because if he can't, I do believe, not necessarily this season, may not even be next season, but maybe the season after, he might find himself at another club.
Great point. Really interesting. Really interesting that. I suppose, I mean, look, as a player, talent-wise, he is absolutely incredible, right? His natural footballing ability is quite spectacular. Like, really, like nothing I can say I've seen. However, what you've said there has got me thinking about when he was at Nice under Vieira, and Vieira said back in 2019, and quoted, yeah, Alan's problem is that sadly he thinks that talent is enough to go to the highest level, and he needs to understand that he needs to work to make sacrifices. He needs to suffer, and sadly he has not yet understood that. And then that got me thinking about your point we did on a podcast earlier on in the season where you said that you don't get the impression he does any kind of weight training as well. So I think that sort of maverick element to his personality, that maverick aspect of him, you could be right. A new manager comes in who's a bit more tactically forensic, right? And he, but like Rafa, right? Like, let's say like Benitez, right? A manager who gives players specific roles and you know, the need to stick to that kind of role. Or like when Guardiola basically has, you know, kind of, he tells Raheem Sterling exactly where he wants to be on the pitch at that point in time. So he may well struggle with that kind of manager. However, the reality is he's such a good player and we're in such a poor position at the minute that the manager coming in has to learn to work with him and to learn to get the best out of him, because we absolutely need a top of his form, Alan Saint-Maximin. He's him and Wilson for me are the absolute keys to get well out of the next 11 games, to get the points that we need to get into January in a position where we can actually make a fist of staying up.
Yeah, well said. And I think I share a lot of those concerns. I think Alan Saint-Maximin is a really, really, really good left winger in the Premier League. I don't think he's a very good striker. And I've unfortunately had enough opportunities to see him play either as a front two or as the lone striker under Bruce in the last, four games, that would play it. I think any new manager is going to have to get him to contribute defensively. I feel like Bruce moved him into the middle. One, because Saint-Maximin has said he prefers to play through the middle. But so what? That's not how football works. You don't just, you know, get to choose your position. And we saw against Spurs, I don't know if it was you who said it, Pete, or someone else said it, that you could see his teammates against Spurs visibly frustrated with him just basically not tracking, you know, not looking behind him, not running back. He's a brilliant footballer and he's our best player when he's on form. However, like you correctly say, new manager is going to have to work out. Because to me, if we're playing Anderson Maximan up front, the team suffers. He should be on the wing, doing his thing, cutting inside, not getting on the long balls or not jumping for long balls or not trying to, you know, you look at Newcastle yesterday and playing two forward players. We had one shot or two shots in the whole game. So you have to question that tactic and if it's working, and I don't think it is. But I'll let you come in for a final point on this one, Pete, before we head to the end of the show.
Yeah, it was just the point that you just touched on with regards to, you know, Anicet Maximin, you know, frustrating the other players in and around him. You could see that yesterday as well, but for different reasons. I think I lost count. It must have been 10, 12, 15 times in the game that Anicet Maximin received the ball and then couldn't hold on to it. And he wasn't able to make a simple pass. There were two or three players in and around him with a simple pass that could just keep the ball ticking over. But he then was trying to do too much with it. And then two or three players would come around him and he was getting the ball nicked. Or the ball was coming into him and his first touch was so bad that it was just giving it back to the opposition. And you could see the players around him as if to say, because when you are playing a defensive formation and you are under the cosh like we were for long parts in the game, you need your best players to be able to soak up the pressure, hold up the ball and give your defence a rest. He did not do that. And I remember saying to the guys that were either side of me when I saw Willock and Almiron getting ready to come on, I said the two players that need to come off is Fraser and Alistair Maximin. Alistair Maximin's gave nothing to this game. And the funny, interestingly, the only time he started to even try and remotely play, and I remember looking at Alistair Maximin as it happened, Miggy Almiron on our left-hand side, so it was right near where the opposition, where we, the away fans were, he picked up the ball, and for the first time in the game, he got the ball and he drove forward and he ran forward and he committed a defender. And I think he won the free kick halfway into their half, and it was a fantastic run. And you could see Alistair Maximin just watching him and thinking, why am I not doing that? Next time Alistair Maximin gets the ball, bang, he does the same. The next time Miggy starts to press the ball, bang, he starts to press the ball. And it was almost a realisation that actually maybe I should be doing this. But we can't wait for 60 minutes, 70 minutes in a game for him to realise that that's what he should be doing. He should be doing that from minute one because he was starting the game. And for me, I think there's a massive argument going into the Chelsea game that Miggy Almiron should be starting ahead of Alistair Maximin. For how good Alistair Maximin is, for me, that performance wasn't good enough. And if he needs to learn that his performance needs to be better, maybe he needs to have a game on the bench.
It's a big call. It's a big call, but I like it. I like it. And I also think we talked about the central midfield earlier and just didn't even talk about Joe Willock, which is probably, says something about his form this season, sadly, so far. And, you know, that's the thing. If you look at Newcastle's bench, there are options there. For whoever comes in, there are options. It's not like when Benitez came in and you had to play Jack Colback and Sissoko at left back. Like, we're not at that stage yet. But we're going to have to finish the show off. Norman, I'm going to let you have the final word. Nine games, 4 points. It's looking pretty bleak. Chelsea and Brighton to come. Bookmakers would have both of those teams as strong favourites in those games against Newcastle United. You are very worried about relegation, aren't you, mate?
I really am. First of all, can I just say that Graham Jones post-match yesterday said he would like to give the players physical credit for the performance, which really got me mind ticking over. What a brilliant thing to say. Plenty more of those, please, Graham. Mate, we're in a massive relegation battle. I think what's happened is because of the takeover and because of the assumption we're going to go and spend loads of money and, you know, start winning trophies and whatnot, challenge for Europe in the next few years, it's almost like we've forgotten that we're actually in a really, really bad position. The games coming up, the 11 games we've got before we can even bring in a new player, I mean, there are some absolute belters in there. You're talking Liverpool, Man City, Man United. You know, as you said, Brighton away is going to be an incredibly difficult game. Chelsea thumped Norwich. I mean, I know that's no great indicator of anything, but like Chelsea under Tuchel, regardless of, you know, Newcastle have always got a good record against Chelsea at home, it means nothing, right? Under a new manager, it means literally nothing. And if we lose these next two games, I mean, it's getting to the stage where even a new manager coming in, we're already going to be cut adrift to the extent that he's got to probably go on like a 5 or 6 game winning streak almost immediately, right? So I'm deeply concerned. And obviously, the talk of Fonseca coming in as manager, now, you know, there've been whispers again that this isn't actually the case. It might be Fonseca's people just putting it out there, much like I think happened with Spurs, if I'm correctly, Alex. I think you mentioned that to me. So my concern, regardless of how good he might be as a manager, and I didn't know much about him until really he was linked with the Newcastle job and I started reading up on him, and he looks like he could be an excellent manager. But for me, possibly the kind of manager who would need a whole pre-season and, you know, would need to bring in his own players and would take time to kind of embed what he wants to do. I think right now we need a manager who's just kind of an impact like that, bang. I mean, in a real kind of presence who gets into that dressing room on that training ground straight in, the players just Stuart Ray are looking up at this person. It's almost like the next appointment, the managerial appointment, is more important than like kind of the first three players we signed. It has got to be, right, because we are in a really serious relegation battle. And Watford's result yesterday was, you know, that was terrible for us.
Totally agree. It's going to be very interesting, isn't it? Because this Chelsea game, if Newcastle lose that game next week, it's likely we'll be cut adrift already in the bottom three, which is a worrying thought going into, not even in November yet, though we will be after the Chelsea game just about. Going to call it there. Thanks so much to you three for coming on the show. Thanks everyone who listens. Hopefully we'll have a win to talk about soon after Chelsea, but I'm not so sure myself. We'll have a full Chelsea preview this week, as well as plenty other shows on our Patreon platform, £5.50 a month. for lots more of these podcasts. Thank you to everybody who listens to the show and watches. Thanks to you three again. We'll speak to everyone after the Chelsea game on the True Faith 3 podcast next week. Cheers. Bye-bye.